Once he was in office, Ronald Reagan hesitated to renew draft registration because, as his Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, explained, President Reagan believes that resuming the draft to meet manpower problems would lead to public unrest comparable to that in the 60s and 70s. William Beecher, a former Pentagon reporter, wrote in November 1981 that Reagan was obviously concerned, even alarmed, by the mounting voices of discontent and suspicion over emerging U.S. nuclear strategy, both in the streets of Europe and more recently on American campuses. Hoping to intimidate this opposition, the Reagan administration began to prosecute draft resistors. One of those facing prison was Benjamin Sassway, who cited U.S. military intervention in El Salvador as a good reason not to register for the draft. Aroused by Sassway's civil disobedience, a right-wing columnist, William A. Rusher of the National Review, wrote indignantly that one heritage of the 60s was a new generation of anti-war teachers. Almost certainly there was a teacher, or teachers, who taught Benjamin Sassway to look at American society as a hypocritical, exploitative, materialistic roadblock on the path of human progress. The generation of the Vietnam protesters is now in its early 30s, and the academicians among them are already ensconced in the faculties of the country's high schools and colleges. What a pity our jurisprudence doesn't allow us to reach and penalize the real architects of this sort of destruction. Reagan's policy of giving military aid to the dictatorship of El Salvador was not accepted quietly around the nation. He had barely taken office when the following report appeared in the Boston Globe. It was a scene reminiscent of the 1960s, a rally of students in Harvard Yard shouting anti-war slogans, a candlelight march through the streets of Cambridge. 2,000 persons, mostly students, gathered to protest U.S. involvement in El Salvador. Students from Tufts, MIT, Boston University, and Boston College, the University of Massachusetts, Brandeis, Suffolk, Dartmouth, Northeastern, Vassar, Yale, and Simmons were represented. During commencement exercises that spring of 1981 at Syracuse University, when Reagan's Secretary of State, Alexander Haig, was given an honorary doctorate in public service, 200 students and faculty turned their backs on the presentation. During Haig's address, the press reported, nearly every pause in Mr. Haig's 15-minute address was punctuated by chants, human needs, not military greed, get out of El Salvador. Washington guns killed American nuns. The last slogan was a reference to the execution in the fall of 1980 of four American nuns by Salvadoran soldiers. Thousands of people in El Salvador were being murdered each year by death squads sponsored by a government armed by the United States, and the American public was beginning to pay attention to events in this tiny Central American country. As has been true generally in the making of U.S. foreign policy, there was no pretense at democracy. Public opinion was simply ignored. A New York Times CBS News poll in the spring of 1982 reported that only 16% of its sampling favored Reagan's program of sending military and economic aid to El Salvador. In the spring of 1983, it was disclosed that an American physician named Charles Clement was working with the Salvadoran rebels. As an Air Force pilot in Southeast Asia, he had become disillusioned with U.S. policy there, having seen firsthand that his government was lying and refused to fly any more missions. The Air Force response was to commit him to a psychiatric hospital, then to discharge him as psychologically unfit. He went to medical school and then volunteered to be a doctor with the guerrillas in El Salvador. There was much talk in the American press in the early 80s about the political cautiousness of a new generation of college students concerned mostly with their own careers. But when, at the Harvard commencement of June 1983, Mexican writer Carlos Fuentes criticized American intervention in Latin America and said, "Because we are your true friends, we will not permit you to conduct yourselves in Latin American affairs as the Soviet Union conducts itself in Central European and Central Asian affairs," he was interrupted 20 times by applause and received a standing ovation when finished. Among my own students at Boston University, I did not find the pervasive selfishness and unconcern with others that the media kept reporting, in deadening repetition, about the students of the 80s. In the journals they kept, I found the following comments. A male student. Do you think anything good that has happened in the world had anything to do with government? I work in Roxbury, a black neighborhood. I know the government doesn't work, not for the people of Roxbury, and not for the people anywhere. It works for people with money. A graduate of a Catholic high school. America to me is a society, a culture. America is my home. If someone were to rob that culture from me, then perhaps there would be reason to resist. I will not die, however, to defend the honor of the government. A young woman. As a white middle-class person, I've never felt discriminated against at all. But I'll say this. If anyone ever tried to make me sit in a different schoolroom, use a different bathroom, or anything like that, I would knock them right on their ass. The people are the last ones that need their rights stated on paper, for if they're abused or injustice by government or authority, they can act on the injustice directly. When you look at the statements of rights and laws, it's really government and authority and institutions and corporations that need laws and rights to insulate them from the physicality, the directness of the people. Beyond the campuses, out in the country, there was opposition to government policy not widely known. A report from Tucson, Arizona, early in the Reagan presidency, described demonstrators, mainly middle-aged, protesting at the federal building against U.S. involvement in El Salvador. Over 1,000 people in Tucson marched in a procession and attended a mass to commemorate the anniversary of the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero, who had spoken out against the Salvadoran death squads. Over 60,000 Americans signed pledges to take action of some sort, including civil disobedience, if Reagan moved to invade Nicaragua. When the president instituted a blockade of the tiny country to try to force its government out of power, there were demonstrations around the country. In Boston alone, 550 people were arrested protesting the blockade. During Reagan's presidency, there were hundreds of actions throughout the nation against his policies in South Africa. He obviously did not want to see the white ruling minority of South Africa displaced by the radical African National Congress, which represented the black majority. Chester Crocker, Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, in his memoirs, called Reagan insensitive to the conditions under which blacks lived there. Public opinion was strong enough to cause Congress to legislate economic sanctions against the South African government in 1986, overriding Reagan's veto. Reagan's cuts in social services were felt on the local level, as vital needs could not be taken care of, and there were angry reactions. In the spring and summer of 1981, residents of East Boston took to the streets. For 55 nights, they blocked major thoroughfares in the Sumner Tunnel during rush hour in order to protest cutbacks in funds for fire, police, and teachers. The police superintendent, John Doyle, said, "Maybe these people are starting to take lessons from the protests of the 60s and 70s. The Boston Globe reported, "The demonstrators in East Boston were mostly middle-aged, middle or working-class people who said they had never protested anything before." The Reagan administration took away federal funds for the arts, suggesting that the performing arts seek help from private donors. In New York, two historic Broadway theaters were razed to make way for a luxury 50-story hotel after 200 theater people demonstrated, picketing, reading plays and singing songs, refusing to disperse when ordered by police. Some of the nation's best-known theater personalities were arrested, including producer Joseph Papp, actresses Tammy Grimes, Estelle Parsons, and Celeste Holm, actors Richard Gere and Michael Moriarty. The budget cuts spurred strikes across the country, often by groups unaccustomed to striking. In the fall of 1982, United Press International reported, "Angered by layoffs, salary cuts, and uncertainty about job security, more school teachers throughout the country have decided to go on strike." Teachers' strikes last week in seven states, from Rhode Island to Washington, have idled more than 300,000 students. Surveying a series of news events in the first week of January 1983, David Nyan of the Boston Globe wrote, "There is something brewing in the land that bodes ill for those in Washington who ignore it. People have moved from the frightened state to the angry stage and are acting out their frustrations in ways that will test the fabric of civil order." He gave some examples. In Little Washington, Pennsylvania, in early 1983, when a 50-year-old computer science teacher who led a teacher's strike was sent to jail, 2,000 people demonstrated outside the jailhouse in his support, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette called it the largest crowd in Washington County since the 1794 Whiskey Rebellion. When unemployed or bankrupt homeowners in the Pittsburgh area could no longer make mortgage payments and foreclosure sales were scheduled, 60 pickets jammed the courthouse to protest the auction, and Allegheny Sheriff Eugene Kuhn halted the proceedings. The foreclosure of a 320-acre wheat farm in Springfield, Colorado, was interrupted by 200 angry farmers who had to be dispersed by tear gas and mace. When Reagan arrived in Pittsburgh in April 1983 to make a speech, 3,000 people, many of them unemployed steelworkers, demonstrated against him, standing in the rain outside his hotel. Demonstrations by the unemployed were taking place in Detroit, Flint, Chicago, Cleveland, Los Angeles, Washington, over 20 cities in all. Just around that time, Miami blacks rioted against police brutality. They were reacting against their general deprivation as well. The unemployment rate among young African Americans had risen above 50%, and the Reagan administration's only response to poverty was to build more jails. Understanding that blacks would not vote for him, Reagan tried, unsuccessfully, to get Congress to eliminate a crucial section of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, which had been very effective in safeguarding the right of blacks to vote in southern states.